Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young of Dope Black Social Worker, and welcome back. We're here for another week and another episode. Let's not delay it because we have many things to talk about, a variety of subjects and conversations that span the entire spectrum of what it means for me to exist in this world as both revolutionary and as a hood rat. So I don't have any revolutionary news for the week, but I do want to give a shout out that's not really a shout out to that social worker on Lilo and Stitch. Y'all remember the movie Lilo and Stitch? And they had a character. His name was Cobra Bubbles. And he was playing like the social worker for the sisters, you know, looking after them in the home or doing checkups of this, that, and the third. I'm going to say it was a wretched depiction and very scary depiction for a children's movie of a social worker. It was like this big, ominous, dark-skinned man. And I think it was voiced by, you know, the black man who be playing God and everything, Earl Jones, the voice of Mufasa. But shout out, but not shout out to that horrible depiction of a social worker, because that also leads me into the first thing that I want to talk about in the Earth is Ghetto section for this week's episode is The Deliverance by Lee Daniels. We got to talk about it. We can't pretend like it didn't happen. We cannot pretend like we didn't have a collective experience together online. Even if you did not watch the movie, you saw clips of this movie, Deliverance, that's on Netflix, that was produced and written by Lee Daniels. Y'all, it was a time. That movie was a time. And so if you did not watch the movie, I don't blame you. I really don't. Because you have to love a particular brand of horrible cinematography to enjoy that movie. And I'm not even gonna say just enjoy it, to tolerate watching it. I happen to enjoy it because I deeply love horrible television and film. Like, it brings me incredible peace and joy to sit up there or lay up there and watch some of the most atrocious things ever written and filmed. And so Deliverance is no different. I would love to be able to give you a synopsis of the plot, but the plot really didn't make too much sense. I do understand that it's based off of a real story of an actual exorcism that did occur, I believe, in Indianapolis with a black family. So this is like the black version of the exorcism, but they're calling it a deliverance because, you know, black folks, I'll be delivered with a T, right? And so it's based off of a true story, even though many of the factors in the movie were definitely changed to fit the script, to fit whatever the look the producers and the director were going for. There were so many scenes that just made you kind of go, what is going on here? And I understand it's supposed to be a horror film, and I dig black folks, black and brown people getting into the horror genre, because I believe we have stories to tell in that area too, and we should be able, you know, to have the grace and opportunity to explore those stories. And so I was excited to watch Deliverance because it was of the horror genre, which I do enjoy. I don't like slasher films. I don't like all that blood and gore, but give me a good plot. Give me some suspense. Give me a psychological thriller. I am locked all the way in. So I was locked in for Deliverance. And I will say, for like the first 30 minutes, I was like, all right, like, where's the horror? Where's the suspense? Like, what's happening? Because right now I'm just deeply confused. I'm deeply confused by Glenn Close and that wig, her lip fillers, and that nameplate. Like, that just had me deeply confused for the first 30 minutes of this film. I will say Andra Day acted her entire tail off from the beginning to the end of the movie. And whoever that little boy was, that little baby, the little demonic baby, that sugar lump can act, okay? I don't know how you get a child to do the things they got that child to do, but I said, this is phenomenal work. This baby is working his ass off, acting his entire ass off. He was also in one of the scenes, and I've shared this online, the little boy shit on the floor when he was possessed and then threw that shit at the teacher, y'all. That would have been the day I fought a child and quit and got my pension and left. That would have been the day. That would have been the day I clocked out of work and went ahead and accepted whatever charges and felonies were coming in my direction. Because that little boy took a shit on the floor in the classroom and threw it at the teacher. And the teacher's mouth was wide open and some of the shit got in her mouth. But that's not even the scene that, you know, has really got the internet by storm. And really, I have been chuckling at for the last several days. And so throughout the film, like, they're exploring all these different themes. And it really just kind of, as somebody, I wouldn't say I have Black church trauma, because I didn't grow up in like an African Methodist church or a Pentecostal church, like these super strict and religious Black churches. But I grew up in a Black church in California, nonetheless, for whatever, you know, whatever context that might offer. But this movie was giving me big, like, Pentecostal vibes, like deep Pentecostal vibes. And I can only imagine for the folks who grew up practicing that particular faith, who have maybe separated from that, those, you know, some of those practices and traditions, like watching this movie and kind of moving through some of these themes and figuring out like where they're settling their body, what's triggering, what's not. I was watching the movie purely for entertainment. And so I don't really have deep insight around all these other themes and things that folks are talking about. But there are two things that pop up for me with the movie Deliverance. And the first thing is like, why did Lee Daniels write that? And that I am referencing is there's a line in the movie where Glenn Close's character reemerges after she has been unalived, killed by the little demon boy. And, you know, they're working through the quote unquote deliverance. They're having their exorcism. They're throwing the holy waters, chaining the little boy up, praying the devil or the spirit or the evil, whatever, up out of him. All of a sudden, the little boy transforms into a evil version of Glenn Close's character, Alberta. And this transition, like this transformation of this character is, you know, they are incredibly scaly. Their teeth are like razor sharp. Their hair is non-existent. And the person who's performing the exorcist is, you know, the homie from Undercover Brother and the homie from the, is that the Clark Sisters movie? I forget. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Hold on. Let me not be that person. Let me look up her name. I think it's like Anja something. Hold on. Yes, Anjanae Ellis. I probably still said that wrong. But the lady who's performing the deliverance is Anjanae. I'm saying that all kinds of wrong. That's all right. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Ellis. And so it's a Black woman. And so Glenn Close's character, in terms of like, why did Lee Daniels write this? Out of nowhere, just says, I can smell your nappy pussy. Like, what? Come on. Come on. Like, how did we get here? How did we get here in this entire movie that is about, you know, not running from your demons, accepting your gifts, fighting for your family, fighting for your freedoms and liberations and self-determination, all of like reclaiming parts of your life you may have lost to addiction and, you know, a life of adversities. How do we have all of these glorious themes and we land on this one particular line that has dominated the narrative about this movie, where they had the audacity to write and then it came out of Glenn Close's mouth probably several times because they had table readings, right? They had rehearsals. They had to film the scene several times from different angles. So she didn't say this shit hella times. I could smell your nappy pussy. That line alone, for somebody as ignorant as me, made watching the movie worth it, right? Like, it made watching that movie absolutely worth it. And so I left with the question of like, why did Lee Daniels write that? But then, like, as time progressed, you know, internet chatter is talking, Lee Daniels feels the need to address a couple of comments or things he may have seen online, which led me to ask the question of like, why did Lee Daniels write that? Because like I mentioned earlier, the movie Deliverance is based off of a true story of a Black family, meaning a whole Black family with two Black, you know, with four Black grandparents, right? Which means all the players involved are very Black. And in this movie, Lee Daniels cast, Glenn Close, who was not very Black at all, as the grandmother of the mother who had the children, who had the demon take over them and take over her. The spirit took them over, right? And so people are just asking, like, hey, like, if this is based off of a true story, where'd this white woman come from? And Lee Daniels got on Twitter and he wrote, "Every person knows an Alberta." Alberta is the white character's name in the movie. "So every person knows an Alberta. She's part of the fabric of our communities, but we've never seen her on screen before. Thank you, Glenn, for bringing her magnificently to life." Y'all, I don't know a single Alberta. Not in my whole black life in existence. Not a single one. And even if I did, I don't understand how this particular caricature of a white person who's proximate to black culture and black people, who birthed a black child and was at some point in her life was partnered with a black man, is the fabric of our communities. I'm sorry, what? Absolutely not. That's not how we're doing this. That's not how we're doing this, Lee. I was with you when you was right. Right? I was with you when you wrote that shit about smelling nappy things. I was with you. I was on your side. We was having a good kiki. It was good. But then now to like try to justify recasting from the real story, a black grandmother, and into your movie, a white grandmother, and then try to sell that to us black people as this character is the fabric of our communities. Oh no, sir. We're not doing that today on Beyonce's birthday. We're not doing that. Right. And so if you haven't had a chance to watch Deliverance, I wouldn't recommend watching it at all, unless you just want a good laugh. If you want to be a part of the conversations, if you want to also be left in confusion, if you want the opportunity to have your own natural reaction to that unexpected line and the many other unexpected scenes in this movie, then I would encourage you to watch the movie. But outside of that, I would say leave that shit alone. It's not for you. It's probably not for you, because if you made it this many days and you might just be hearing about Deliverance from listening to this and you haven't watched it, just go ahead and keep it like that. Don't watch that. Don't watch it. So y'all know how I just be having random thoughts. Like my brain be working, like that shit be working real good. But sometimes I'd be like, girl, ooh, where'd this come from? And this was one of those moments, and I felt compelled to share it with y'all. I started thinking about Adam Walsh. I'm imagining that many of y'all are familiar with the Adam Walsh story, which launched the National Center of Missing Children, Missing Exploited Children, of when Adam Walsh got kidnapped and murdered. And this was in 1981 when this happened, right? And so that, like, when I was thinking about that particular moment, because I was reflecting on growing up, like born in 88, you know, being a kid in the 90s, and thinking like during that period of time of like how parenting shifted and supervision shifted. Here's the thing. Let me back up. I have a theory. And I'm open to other perspectives and challenges on this theory, but I think this shit might be real. So I have a theory that after the Adam Walsh kidnapping or abduction and murder in 1981, this was like the end of this latchkey kid era, right? We hear a lot from Gen X, Zennials about like being latchkey kids, meaning, you know, they were just out in the world, playing outside, street lights on and off, wandering around, biking everywhere, walking everywhere, no cell phones, no land, no like public phone, like all this type of shit, right? Just living. And they just had a key to the house and they would just come home, walk themselves to school, walk themselves home, all type of shit, right? During the 70s, 60s, during the 60s and 70s. And so we get like into this 80s era. And I'm really thinking like after this whole Adam Walsh situation is when this latchkey kid ended. And there was a shift and a change in how parenting and supervision happened. And I'm paid attention and reflecting on how some of that impacted my life and this increase in parental anxiety around wanting to know where your children are, what they're doing. And I even remember when I was in elementary school, like this organization used to come to the school and they would pay to take, and I have the card still actually, they would pay to take pictures of, or you would pay to have your picture taken. And it'd be like, if I'm missing, like, here's my information and here's who you need to contact. It was like these missing kid cards. I don't know if y'all ever did this before, but I definitely have these missing kid cards of like my mom would buy them when they would come to the school and take our pictures. And I'm thinking like, what other generations did this shit? And I'm certain, like, I bet you millennials on the older end of that are like the last generation to do that, because, you know, then we get cell phones with pictures and online internet, all this type of shit. But I remember like going to take these pictures in elementary school, like if I end up missing, here's how you find me. And then it also made me think about like how that particular situation likely contributed to this billion-dollar industry around childcare, after school care and programming, before school care, summer camps, all of this stuff. Like, yeah, these things existed in some capacity, but the scale that we've seen them grow from the 80s and 90s until like 2024, massive. The money associated behind childcare, after school care, before school care, all kind of summer enrichment camps, all of this stuff. It's an entire industry that did not exist at this level prior to, you know, this Adam Walsh situation. Now, I could be wrong. I'm open to being wrong. But I was like, damn, one missing white boy, one murdered white boy changed a lot of shit for a lot of people. And then it made me continue to think about like how people don't pay attention to this stuff until it does happen. Number one, to them, like then it really matters. But when the them is a person of like power and influence and they also happen to be white, then all of a sudden it's a problem that everybody pays attention to. And so, yeah, I don't even know why I was thinking. Well, actually, I do know why I was thinking about that shit. I was packing up a box and I saw like my little missing kid card from when I was elementary school. I was like, what? Like, what was the purpose of this shit? And then I started thinking, well, I bet you Adam Walsh have something to do with this. I bet you Adam Walsh got something to do with this. And then that also led me down this trail of thoughts around like, you know, I love me some true crime, if it's a podcast or a docuseries, a documentary. And I know my childhood is reflective of that. Because the books that I read, I believe they foreshadowed where I am today, because I didn't read like Babysitter's Club. I wasn't reading the books. I was reading like Goosebumps and Anamorphosis. Is it Anamorphosis? Whatever, that book series where them kids would turn into like aliens or like hybrids of animals and shit. And then you had to figure out how this happened. Like, I would love reading books that like dropped clues. And then you had to like keep reading to get to the conclusion or solve, or like use your own skills to help solve a problem as you're reading through a story. And so I was like, damn, Kim, like baby Kim was also even into all this wild shit. Like none of this is new for me. And so it's even more affirming when I come across people who knew me at different stages of life. And we're like, oh yeah, like I knew this would, you would end up here. Like, all of this makes sense. Even me currently obsessing over Chimp Crazy, which we're not going to talk about today, because by the time next week comes around, I will be done with all four episodes. And then we're going in deep. You hear me? We are going in all the way deep next week with Chimp Crazy. And so the last thing that I want to talk about in this segment of Earth is Ghetto this week is it's new to me. It may not be new to other people, but it's new to me because I saw it most recently the last couple of days, primarily on Instagram. There was a page that was created called Investigate NASW. And so if those aren't familiar, NASW stands for the National Association of Social Workers. And I was sent this page several times by various cousins online. I was like, well, like, what's going on with this? What is this about? And so I took some time to look through the various posts that they have. But this particular page, what they have in the bio section for Investigate NASW is that members and non-members advocating for accountability at the NASW. What they are saying in terms of all of the posts that they currently have, or all allegations are alleged. And so I just wanted to take some time to talk about this. But then even update or help people understand where my mind is around not just the NASW, but also the ASWB, the CSWE, all of these organizations that pretty much govern how social work is practiced in the United States and a couple of territories around the globe. So if you would have caught me, I would say like 5 years ago, you would have caught me in a different headspace with less information, moving in a type of impulse that was not and is not constructive. Meaning, as I have gotten older, gained more wisdom and experience, access to more information, slowed my mind down, and became more focused on what my purpose and mission currently is in this work and what I'm seeking to accomplish with the time that I have left in the field of social work, I now have a greater understanding of, you know, where I need to put my energy, but then ultimately who and what the targets are of my advocacy, of my, you know, use of my voice, use of my power, use of my platforms, all of these things. And I'm gonna tell you something, the NASW is a low-hanging fruit for me. Because I understand that, yeah, they be full of some shit. Yeah, having a really difficult time understanding what the relevancy is in modern practice of social work. Yep, I absolutely do not agree with the way in which the organization has historically shown up on a number of issues. However, I have come to greater understand what their function is. And I was upset. I had misplaced anger with the NASW, believing that they function in a way I thought they did when they absolutely do not. They're a membership-based organization. Yes, the decisions that they make, the policies that they push for, the advocacy that they engage or disengage in, it impacts all of us as a profession, indirectly and directly. However, being membership-based, they are primarily focused on the members within their organization and quote-unquote creating a good member experience, right? And so y'all know previously I've had many interactions with national office leadership prior to leadership changing. I believe that was in 2023. So last year is when the, Dr. Angelo McClain, I believe is his last name. He retired after 10 years as the CEO of the national chapter. And then Dr. Anthony Eastreet took over as the executive director of the national office of the NASW last year sometime. And so right now with this, a lot of the posts on this Investigate NASW page speak directly to alleging things about Dr. Eastreet. And these things I'm just not gonna repeat because I don't have the energy to do that. And, you know, y'all have access to the internet. So if you feel the need to dig into these allegations or just dig into these allegations further, that's on you to do. What I would like to do is separate the individual from the organization. And so I hear these calls for accountability for the NASW to investigate the NASW. But at this current moment in time, it feels like much of the target of this energy and aggression and anger is for one Black man. And I'm calling it out as a Black man because we know, and we don't have to guess, we can literally look up this information, it's very objective, that the NASW is an overwhelmingly white woman organization through employment and through membership. And so let me stop that right there. Remember, I'm separating the man from the organization. What I know about Dr. Anthony Eastreet and what I have gained an opportunity to learn more from and about Dr. Eastreet, if you have ever read any of his publications, which I strongly encourage you to do, is to read the academic and other publications that Dr. Anthony Eastreet has out in the world for us to consume and think and kind of sit with and make greater sense of his teachings, honestly, because he is an educator at the end of the day. You would understand or you would see through his readings and his research. And if you, even if you've ever heard him speak, that he's Black as fuck. He's black as shit, right? And so I'm saying that to offer some comparison to Dr. Angelo, who was previously in the role for 10 years, y'all. We didn't hear, also a black man, no, you know, I'm not taking anything from him. He's also a black, he was a black man from a different generation and a different time, right? Different way of approaching conflict, different way of trying to work towards consensus, different ways of seeing some of these issues and what's possible and not possible. We definitely came from an older generation. I'm not trying to do like, you know, age wars, race wars, none of that bullshit. I'm just pointing out some facts that I think are helpful for people to contextualize as they dive deeper into this Investigate NASW claims that are happening right now. And so Dr. Eastreet, from if you read his teachings, if you hear him talk, before he ever got to the NASW, he operates from a liberatory praxis. He operates from a black-centered praxis, right? He operates from not giving a fuck about appeasing the white gaze. And all of that is explicit through his teachings. Even if you've never had conversation with this man before, you can read some of his articles. You can see the things he's published in books. You can look up, you know, conversations and lectures he's had online. You can see all of these things reflected, right? And so I'm sharing this because I want to go back to remind us all that the NASW is an overwhelmingly white woman organization, currently being led by a black man who operates from a liberatory praxis that's black as fuck. And now we're hearing all of these calls for transparency and whistleblowing within the organization from members and non-members, former employees, current employees. And we have to ask the question, why now? Why now? What is happening internally inside of the national office of the NASW that has likely fractured and upset some white fragility? I'm gonna call it what it is. That now we have this outpouring of aggression and anger pointed in the direction of this one black man. Because problems don't just automatically get created in the last year and some change. Shit would have had to already be bad inside of the organization, right? Processes, policies, practices, people would have already had to be bad before Dr. Eastreet even got there. I find it very hard to believe that one person can come in and fuck up an organization to the extent that these claims are being made. I find it very difficult to believe. I'm also finding it very difficult to trust the voices behind whatever this page is that is deciding what information is relevant for public consumption and what's not. And many of these claims are actually just petty as fuck. And this is not me defending the NASW by any means. Like if they're saying what they're, if it, you know, if these claims are right, that like all of these things that are happening are going to cause the organization to fail or collapse or this, that, and the third, let that shit burn. It could burn up. Because at the end of the day, what is the relevancy of the NASW for your everyday social worker? They have no relevancy in my life, in the way I practice, how I do this work, where I'm employed. And so if it's going to collapse, let that shit collapse. But what we're not going to do is try to blame a black man or a black body for it. That's what we're not going to do. That's what we're not going to do, especially when it's an organization that's rooted in supremacy, colonialism, and capitalism. We're not doing that shit. All of these institutional problems with inside, you know, within the NASW in any organization, you know, replace NASW and plop in any org you want. That shit has always existed before leadership gets there. And I think people need to understand like organizational culture, organizational trauma, it's also occurring the same time individual traumas are happening, right? We're living in a society that is, you know, systematically traumatized, individuals who never get reprieved from trauma from all sorts of intersections. And so what we just not gonna do, and what I don't want anyone to ever think that I will do, is use my voice, use my platform, and use my power to protect harmful institutions and organizations. I'm not doing that shit. And that includes the NASW. But what I will do is use my voice and my power and my platform to give information in the ways that I have received it, to help people think differently about these situations, to help people inform their decision making, and, you know, not just be so short-sighted without digging deeper and asking these questions like, why now? What are you trying to save the NASW for and from? And is the real threat one man? I have too many questions and too many answers, honestly, to believe that all of these claims that have been made are true. So I'm somebody who is looking at this particular situation by separating the individual from the organization, looking at that organization and its history, its challenges, its shortfalls, the harm that it continues to perpetuate and create, the harm that I experienced at the hand of that organization. And I'm not placing one man at the center of all of the shit. It's really easy to point the finger at the top. We love to do it all of the time. But when you really look around, the responsibility for whatever is occurring is shared. And I can only imagine that Dr. Eastreet is likely activating the nervous systems of some white women. They are pissed off about something. I don't know what the something is, but you can't tell me they not. And yes, there's a sprinkling of black women, black and brown folks in the organization, but overwhelmingly it's white women. And this type of rage that's being displayed on this Instagram page, it screams white woman rage. White woman fragility. That's what that shit says to me. And I'm a ride for my people in public every single time. But when we get more information and when I get more information, I'll come correct. But until that happens, no, we're not doing this. I'm not doing this. I know way too many black social workers that have been guided and mentored by Dr. Eastreet, that have been educated by Dr. Eastreet to ever. Like he's human. We're all human. We're all incredibly flawed. We do shit. We all do. But this amount of rage and anger in the direction of this one person for an institutional bullshit, nah. It's bigger than Dr. Eastreet. It always has been, and it always will be. And so I just want to encourage y'all, if you dive any deeper into this Investigate NASW, I'm going to just call it a movement that is currently happening, put your thinking caps on. Gather more information. Do your research. Ask the right questions. Call for transparency. And don't try to pretend like racial, gender, age, all of them, all of the categories, all the affinity groups are not a factor in what's currently happening. Don't ever think it's not. Because I can have a whole separate conversation about black-led nonprofit culture and how people will do anything and everything to take you down. But that we'll do that on a different day. We're going to stop Earth is Ghetto right there, and let's go ahead and get into Tales from the Trap for the week. So my Tales from the Trap for the week, it's a short one, and it's one that I have carried with me, and I kind of feel like I'm getting, talking about age, I feel like I'm aging, or I just got a lot of stuff on my head and on my mind, so, you know, forgive me if I have shared this before. I don't think I did here, but if I did, we're going to have this tale again because it's a good one if you have not heard it. And so when I got my first job after getting licensed back in 2016, I was working at this place for local government. And I was the youngest person in the office, obviously, because when I got licensed, I might have been like, I don't know, 27, 28, some shit. Too young to be somebody's licensed therapist, I'll tell you that much. But, it's my first little job. I'm the youngest person in the office. The majority of the folks that I'm working with are like in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then the director at the time, he was probably, I don't know, like in his 70s or something, had a 40, 50 career in this particular industry. And he came, I remember when I first got there, he fought for me to have an office. I was like, thank you, homie. Like, he upset some of the other, OGs in the office that was working in cubicles. But he was like, nah, like, she's going to be seeing kids. She can't do it in a cubicle. She needs an office. And so the homie got me an office. So, like, he would come like in my office, big granddad energy, and just kind of sit down and he would talk to me. In the mornings, when he did come into the office, he would come and talk to me in the mornings while he drank his coffee. And one day he shared with me these two gems that I hold on to right now. The first one is a short one, which I'll give to you now, which is never schedule a meeting after 1 p.m. on Fridays. Don't do it. I haven't done it ever since he said something to me. He said, whatever you do, don't you ever schedule or take no meetings on Friday after 1 p.m. I didn't even ask why. I just said, okay, because it already made sense to me. And so I'm sharing that with y'all. Don't you ever schedule or take no meetings on Fridays after 1 p.m. So that's the first gem he gave me. The second gem that he gave me had a lot to do with him coming out of retirement three times. So he was such an OG in his industry where, like, he was kind of like the cleanup person in many ways. So he would come into organizations and clean them up or be the face of it for a while shit died down or problems got resolved. And then he would go back into the land of retirement and gardening and running his other businesses and riding around in his truck, just looking at the world. And this was the third time that they brought him out of retirement to, do what he does, which is to speak, show up when he needs to show up, and then ride around in his truck and go visit his gardens. And he told me about putting gravy on the grits. And he said to me, I'm only here to put gravy on my grits. I said, what's that mean? He said, well, I already have two other pensions in retirement. So I'm just here to put gravy on my grits. I said, what does that mean? He said, I'm just here to collect my money and put gravy on my grits. And I didn't understand that at the time because I was young and I was eager. And I was like, oh, no, like, we got to do more and work hard. And I'm looking at this man who's working for 40 something years. Like, why you not working hard? But I get it now at the tender age of 37. I'm about to be 37. Is I understand this concept of, like, you do reach a certain point in your life and in your career where you just want to put gravy on your grits. You don't work too hard for shit. You've already worked hard enough. And so when people in the office would complain about, him coming in, quote unquote, late or leaving early, or he not working, he not doing this out of the third, I was like, this man that worked for 40 years, clearly he's good at something because they call him in to clean up y'all bullshit. If he want to come in here and just put gravy on his grits, he has earned the right to put gravy on his grits. So I'm sharing that to say, I can't wait for me, for you, for all of us to adopt a part of this mindset of not working, not taking no meetings after 1 p.m. on a Friday. And when we reach this point in our career, it's cool to just put gravy on your grits. Like, job well done. You did all the things. How cute, how cool of you. Now sit back and literally just put, or figuratively, excuse me, just put gravy on your grits. And he also just taught me how to slow down at work. Like, he would take me he would be like, take a ride. And I'd be like, I have work to do. He'd be like, take a ride. And like, we would get in the truck and we would go to the community gardens around the city. And then he would tell me stories about what buildings used to be, what used to be there, who people on the corner were, because he had been in that, you know, in this work for so long that he knew a lot of people and a lot of people knew him. And so shout out to the homie for teaching me how to, I didn't get the lesson then. All these years later, I get it now. Thank you for teaching me that lesson on slowing down, even throughout your workday, taking those rides to the community garden, teaching me to never take a meeting on Fridays after 1 p.m. and to learn how to accept being cool with just putting gravy on my grits because I've already done enough. So that's the tales from the trap for the week. And then lastly, a good black word. It's gonna be short. So I have just noticed there's like this increase view. There's like an increase in human supremacy is how I'm going to frame it. Meaning like humans are, we, us people are thinking entirely too big of ourselves in the context of this world. This world is massive. It is big as shit. And I have noticed how easy it is for individuals to put themselves at the center of other people's stories and experiences without a consideration of like the worldview and how, take this how you want to take it. Yeah, everybody's important. You matter, but you're not that important. You're not that important to everybody and everything. And so when we hear things and we see things and then we insert ourselves into those things that we hear and see, I do start to question, where is that coming from? What is that rooted in? Why do you think that shit is about you? That person was talking about you, thinking about you, looking at you. They probably weren't thinking about you, talking about you, or looking at you. And this, I believe, is leading to, you know, the ongoing increase in anxiety of all types, but also the fracturing of just relationships and different relationship dynamics and friendships and interpersonal relationships, intrapersonal relationships, all of them. It's like we have made ourselves too big in other people's world and we're not big enough in our own. And that's ass backwards. So I want to encourage y'all to take yourselves out of the center of other people's worlds, their stories, their perspectives, their lives, their feelings, their eyeballs, whatever it might be, and drop yourself back into the center of your own world. Like, do it now. It's going to save some of your feelings from being hurt. It's going to improve some of your relationships. But most importantly, it's going to make you have a better relationship with yourself. So please, please. I'm not going to say think smaller of yourself, but like understand how big the world is and how small we are in it. And play your role. Play your role. That's it. That's it. That's all. That's all I got for us this week, y'all. I appreciate y'all a great deal. I truly do. And maybe I'll be back next week. Actually, I will be back next week because we got to talk about chimp crazy. But until then, like y'all, please remember to take care of your heart so that we can take care of each other. Because at the end of the day, we are absolutely all that we got. And we will chat next time. Y'all be well.